when asked first of all, if this has anything to do with the war in Israel, and he denied it, and then asked if he thought that the bombings would stop the assaults or interdiction or interference or whatever with ships going to Israel, he said no, and then he said, but they're going to continue anyway. So there's no doubt, there's no other purpose that these things serve other than as an integral part of the war that Israel is conducting. They're denying it because, as your other guest pointed out, in essence, if they're coordinating military activity and one party is committing genocide, the other side is also culpable. It's, in essence, what you call in contract law, joint and several liability. They're both doing it if one is doing it and they're working together.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Zakir Abendmaye, attorney, activist, and political analyst, joining us from Johannesburg, and radio host and journalist at CPR News, Don DeBar, joining us from Austin, New York. And also thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dhuha min ba'din wallahu samiyun 'alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration, accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing. And when she bore her, she said, My Lord, I have borne a female child, and Allah knew better what she had borne. And the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, O Mary, from where does this come for you? She said, It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran asserts the right to respond to Israel's organized terrorism, but exposes its close ties to regional terrorist groups, including Daesh. Monday, 107 of the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in the Gaza Strip, the death toll surges to 25,000, mostly including women and children. Yemen's prime minister says the U.S. and the U.K., as creators of the Zionist entity in West Asia, seek to protect it by all means possible and destroy any group or country that stands against it.
Welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Mias. Thanks for joining us.
The Israeli regime launched a fresh attack on Saturday against Syria, hitting a building within a residential area in the capital, Damascus, where Iranian military advisors and Syrian citizens were residing. More details from our correspondent in Damascus, Ibrahim Wahdi.
Once again, the Israeli regime launched an aerial attack against Syria, targeting a residential area in the Syrian capital, Damascus. Several Syrian troops and at least five Iranian military advisors were martyred, according to an IRGC statement. Military experts say that these acts are clear evidence of Israel's failure in Gaza.
The repeated attacks by the Zionist entity on residential areas indicates that this entity is internally troubled due to its failure to control the Gaza Strip. Therefore, the occupation regime is attempting to export its crises to the region and drag it into a regional war.
Today's aggression on the capital, Damascus, and the targeting of Iranian figures violates international laws and norms because they are present in Syria at the official request of the sovereign Syrian government. It is within the rights of the Syrian government to seek the assistance of advisors to combat terrorism, just like any other country in the world.
At least seven bodies were retrieved from under the rubble of the three-story residential building, which was within a street full of diplomatic missions. Syrian civilians, political figures, and popular media have all denounced this criminal aggression that demonstrates the savage nature of the Zionist regime. They said that such terrorist acts would not intimidate the resistance front.
This is very ugly, worse than you can imagine. I live here nearby. I heard huge explosions in my neighbor's building. A lot of glass was broken. Vehicles were destroyed. And when I went outside to see what had happened, I found a three-story building completely destroyed. This has frightened all the residents in this street. Children were crying in fear and women were screaming. My neighbor is sick and didn't know what to do.
Israelis have failed in Gaza, so they have gone crazy and are firing in any direction to make it clear that they are present. But they will not succeed because the axis of resistance is resilient. I was less than 100 meters away when the explosion occurred. May God bless the souls of the martyrs.
Late last month, the Israeli regime assassinated a senior Iranian advisor, General Sayed Rassi Mousavi, in a missile strike that targeted his house in the vicinity of Sayyida Zainab Shrine south of Damascus. The Israeli regime is trying to intimidate the peoples of the region and is pushing to escalation through assassinations and terrorist attacks in the region. But people insist that they will never be afraid of the apartheid regime. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Reactions are pouring in following an Israeli airstrike in Syria that led to the martyrdom of several people. Iran strongly condemned the attack as a clear violation of Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said that Iran reserves the right to respond to Israel's organized terrorism, which proves the profound ties between the regime and various terrorist groups in the region, including Daesh. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has also condemned the attack, saying that the Islamic Republic will not leave Israel's crime unanswered. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas also slammed the terrorist act, saying such actions by the Zionist regime will never stop the resistance movements from continuing to support the Palestinian people. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad strongly condemned the attack, saying the assault was part of Israel's efforts to make up for its defeat. It also said the regime is seeking to expand the Gaza onslaught to the entire region. 107 days into the Israeli war on the Gaza Strip, the regime continues with its deadly carpet bombing campaign across the besieged Palestinian territory. According to a new report published by the independent human rights watch group Euromed Monitor, Israel has killed nearly 100 university professors, along with hundreds of teachers. Israel has destroyed literally every university in the Gaza Strip and has targeted schools that have become shelters for displaced Palestinians. Hundreds of Palestinian lives are lost to the indiscriminate strikes every day. The Israeli onslaught on Gaza has so far left nearly 25,000 people dead, most of them women and children. More than 62,000 Palestinians have also been wounded. Author and journalist Robert Fantina believes Israel's targeting of Palestinian educational centers is an attempt to eliminate the nation's history and culture as part of the regime's genocidal campaign.
Israel wants to eliminate all of Palestine's cultural heritage, all of its educational abilities and opportunities. These are not accidental bombings. These are targeted and with a purpose. And the purpose is part of genocide, which is to destroy everything about Palestine, their history, their culture, their thousand-year-old background. It wants to destroy everything. This is intentional, and this is why, one of the many reasons why, that Israel has been brought to the International Court of Justice to finally be held accountable for these crimes. We'll see what the International Court says, hopefully in the next couple of weeks. But these things are blatant violations of international law. They are blatant war crimes, and they are blatant aspects of genocide. And this is what Israel is involved in doing, and it's savagery, and the people of Gaza are suffering horribly because of it, and will for decades in the future because of Israel's actions today.
Israeli forces have blown up the home of a Palestinian in the occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil. The Israeli military also evacuated the residents of adjacent buildings. The house that was destroyed belonged to Nasrullah Al-Kawasmi. He was one of the three Palestinians who carried out a retaliatory shooting operation in the Ramat settlement in occupied East Al-Quds in November. At least three Israelis were killed and eight others were injured in the operation. Kawasmi and two other Palestinians were also killed. The Hamas resistance movement claimed responsibility for the operation, describing it as a natural response to unprecedented Israeli crimes against Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank. Yemen's prime minister says the U.S. and the U.K., as creators of the Zionist entity in West Asia, seek to protect it by all means possible and destroy any group or country that stands against it. Abdulaziz bin Habtour was speaking to elaborate on Yemen's recent anti-Israeli operations, support of Gaza, and the Western attacks on Yemen. He said the U.S. and Britain are not aggressive against Yemen alone, but against all of humanity, and especially any country that may seek liberation from Western colonialism. The Yemeni Prime Minister said that his country started anti-Israel operations in the Red Sea after Arab regimes shunned their responsibility to protect the people of Gaza. Bin Habtour said Yemen's enemies try to distort the reality by claiming that Yemen is a threat to the world. He said this will not discourage Sana'a and will continue with anti-Israeli operations until the aggression and blockade on Gaza stops. Iraq's Islamic Resistance says it has launched a barrage of missiles at the U.S.-run Ain al-Assad base in western Iraq. A U.S. official says American personnel suffered minor injuries in the attack. The official said initial reports indicated that the base was hit by ballistic missiles. Iraqi media reports say that over 40 rockets were fired in the biggest anti-U.S. operation by Iraqis since October 7. Over the past months, Iraqi resistance forces have carried out attacks on American bases both in Iraq and neighboring Syria on an almost daily basis. Iraq's Islamic Resistance says the attacks are in response to Washington's support for the Israeli regime amid the Gaza genocide. Earlier, correspondent in Baghdad, Muslim Salim, joined us with more details about the Iraqi Islamic Resistance's latest attack on American forces.
Just about an hour ago, the Iraq Resistance has carried out a large, let's say, missile attack on Ain al-Assad, western Baghdad. Now, the significance of this attack, that out of these 57 attacks that was, let's say, carried out by Iraq Resistance in the country, this is the largest in number of rockets. Initial numbers said that there is a number of casualty, not, let's say, there's nothing specific yet, but the attack was very large when it comes to the number of rockets. Like I said, it's the largest attack on an American base in Iraq ever since the operation has started. So there is only one way to go from now. The resistance are intensifying their attack as they promised.
Pro-Palestine rallies have been held in various cities across the world. In some cases, the demonstrations turned violent, with security forces trying to disperse the protesters. The global outrage against the Israeli regime's crimes in Gaza have even spread among Israelis. Mainstream media, however, rarely cover Israelis' protests against the war in Gaza. In the Israeli city of Haifa, regime forces attacked anti-war demonstrators on Saturday. The Israeli protesters held signs reading "Stop the Genocide in Gaza." Elsewhere in Italy's northern city of Vicenza, a pro-Palestine rally turned violent and into clashes between the police and protesters. Police used water cannon to disperse the demonstrators. In some major European cities, protesters demanded an immediate and permanent ceasefire in the Gaza Strip.
I'm 74 today, and we are going to march today to say stop to the impunity of the criminal regime of Israel. This is a European march. In Palestine, we are paying for the crimes committed in Europe. Stop the impunity of the criminal regime of Israel. Yes to an immediate ceasefire and a complete end to the occupation in Palestine.
We are asking them to stop bombing Palestine and to stop killing Palestinians and let them have a state of their own.
Thousands of protesters marched in Spain, Madrid, and Barcelona demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. The footage shows protesters holding a giant Palestinian flag and chanting slogans like "Free Palestine" and "Long live the struggle of the Palestinian people." Also, hundreds of pro-Palestine demonstrators joined a rally in Paris in support of activists marching from the French capital to the European Council in Brussels to demand an end to the genocide in Gaza. The UK's West Midlands city of Birmingham has been the scene of a massive pro-Palestine demonstration, one of several held since the start of the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in Gaza. It comes in the face of continued U.K. government support for the Israeli regime that has caused unprecedented public outrage, alienating the country's Muslim community. Said Purza has more.
True to their word, they have done it again. Thousands, on foot or by bike, have thronged the streets of Birmingham to say this.
We are riding for Palestine. We want a ceasefire now.
People and children are being killed in Gaza, which is completely unacceptable.
Stop murdering children and innocent people.
In the run-up to today's protest, activists glued shut a branch of London-headquartered banking giant Barclays in Birmingham for allegedly investing in Israeli weapons manufacturers.
I think a lot of people are now fed up by carrying out totally non-violent, non-interactive events. And now they're taking a proactive step so that they get noticed. And this is desperation. And in a one way, it's showing the great crisis that we face in this country, that when the public wants the government to call for a ceasefire, yet our politicians are not listening to the majority of the British public.
Britain's support for apartheid Israel takes many shapes. Visiting Tel Aviv in mid-October last year, British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak stood next to his Israeli counterpart Benjamin Netanyahu and said this.
As your friend, we will stand with you in solidarity, we will stand with your people, and we also want you to win.
Prime Minister!
Whatever a win might look like for apartheid Israel, Sunak's Conservative Party and the opposition Labour Party, whose leader Keir Starmer has also backed Netanyahu's war, have both lost voters like Karen, a lawyer.
I feel like we've been massively let down by all governments, all parties across the board, and I've completely lost all faith in all of them.
One group that say the UK position on the US-Israeli genocide in Gaza has completely alienated them are British Muslims, who constitute nearly 7% of the population.
We feel that the people that we have elected to represent us in the corridors of power have become a bunch of yes men. They are saying yes sir, three bags full sir, maybe because they are afraid to lose their careers. This is how bad it's become.
Disappointed with the government and the political establishment, it is in the streets of Britain where people see the future of pro-Palestine solidarity in the UK as they hope for peace that couldn't come a minute too soon. Said Purza, Birmingham.
In the West, supporters of Palestine are often braving sub-zero temperatures to demand that Washington end its support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. Over in Chicago, protesters have led a car caravan protest to voice their support for Palestine. Ramin Mazari has more.
Winter has arrived with a vengeance across the United States, but that didn't stop pro-Palestinians from protesting nationwide and in Chicago, the home of the nation's largest Palestinian community. With temperatures in the Windy City feeling like minus 21 degrees Celsius or minus 5 degrees Fahrenheit, Palestinian supporters led a car caravan to remind commuters, passersby, and those safe at home that Gaza is being destroyed with homicidal impunity and with American bombs, guns, and diplomatic cover.
You know, our people back home are going through a lot worse than just, you know, being cold, and so we can definitely, you know, we can live through it. You know, we have to keep continue putting pressures. You know, it's in these winter months and winter days, it's, you know, we've gotten more creative with our actions. That's why we have, sometimes we have caravans. Caravans will still make some noise. You're still, you know, making some disruptions to the city, the flow of the city, the flow of the traffic. So, yeah, you know, we have to continue. We don't have a choice.
In just over 3.5 months, Israel has killed some 25,000 Palestinians, 70% of them women and children, and wounded over 60,000 people. A stunning 60% of Gaza's buildings have been destroyed or damaged, and Israel is formally facing charges of genocide in the International Court of Justice at The Hague. United States President Joe Biden has now repeatedly bombed Yemen without getting prior approval from the United Nations or his own Congress. But there seems to be almost no concern in Washington about the illegality of the strikes. Activists say that neither Washington nor Tel Aviv seem to understand that nothing can stop the Palestinians and their supporters around the world. Not murder, bombs, theft, lies, and certainly not cold weather. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
The UN chief has called for all countries to recognize the right of the Palestinians to build their own state.
The refusal to accept the two-state solution for Israelis and Palestinians and the denial of the right to statehood for the Palestinian people are unacceptable. These would indefinitely prolong a conflict that has become a major threat to global peace and security, exacerbate polarization, and embolden extremists everywhere. The right of the Palestinian people to build their own state must be recognized by all.
Antonio Guterres told the Non-Aligned Movement Summit in Uganda that the denial of the right to statehood for Palestinians is unacceptable. He says such a stance would indefinitely prolong a conflict that has become a major threat to global peace and security. The UN leader was reacting to recent comments by the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, in which he reaffirmed his opposition to the creation of a viable Palestinian state. The remarks drew criticism from many, even the U.S., which is Israel's main backer. The Palestinian presidency spokesman also condemned Netanyahu's remarks. Nabil Abu Radane said that it is time for the U.S. to recognize the state of Palestine, not just talk about a two-state solution. He added that the Israeli regime is not interested in peace and stability. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints. It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the firstest of brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن.
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
Supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon his word, and I cling only to his cord. In thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure. From wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For thou art Allah, the best guardian, and thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to thee, addressing myself to thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to you for the hope of your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of thy creation, the summoner to thy truth. Exalt me with thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
Year 1402, slogan. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Economy is one of the areas which has been highlighted in the power of countries in the last three decades, and it is even one of the reasons for the world to enter a period of orderly transition. In this episode, we will discuss the importance of economy in the world system. Stay with us, please. During the different eras of international relations, different components were considered as the basis of power of countries. In most of the periods, having military power was considered the main reason for the strength of countries. Since the second half of the 20th century, having military power without having economic capability stopped being the reason for countries to be powerful. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, which occurred at the peak of the country's military power, the role of economic factor in power of countries became more prominent. Theorists of international relations even gave the priority of power to the economic position of countries in the world system because, from the internal aspect, it would provide more satisfaction to the people and also from the external aspect, it would strengthen the position of the countries in the world system. Today, in the middle of the third decade of the 21st century, the importance of economic power has become more and more prominent in a way that countries take advantage of the economic capability for soft power, regional and global influence, and even provision of security by presenting a positive image of themselves. Today, the impact of economic factors on political relations has been highlighted, and in recent years, we have witnessed that more attention has been paid to this issue in such a way that a number of international organizations were established and regional unions entered the field for economic relations. At this time, numerous groups were formed in the world. From G20 to G7, G8, and other groups had a serious view of economy in the world and understood the economic effects on political relations. The role of economy in the power of countries can be seen in a tangible way, and in addition to safeguarding the security of their borders, governments are moving towards reaching global markets in order to gain more power. The term economic diplomacy, which has been added to the vocabulary since the Cold War era, and the history of its use goes back to the last decade, is the concept of using international political tools to achieve economic goals, which pursues development goals and provides the country's economic interests in the world class. Economic diplomacy is not only considered in Iran, but all over the world, and successful countries consider it as a strategic issue because the use of political tools to influence economic relations determines the national interest of any country. The rapid economic growth of the emerging powers has strengthened their position in the world system and even raised views about changing the global structure and transitioning the world to a multipolar order. Another issue related to the position of economy is instrumental use of sanctions. The political and security importance of economy is such that the United States and European countries use economic sanctions as their most important tool to prevent the growth of other countries, change the direction of foreign policy, and exert pressure on political behavior of countries. This applies especially to the Islamic Republic of Iran and the Russian Federation. Firstly, the United States and Europe try to prevent the economic growth of independent countries like Iran and Russia by using the leverage of sanctions. Secondly, Western countries try to create economic discontent and political dissatisfaction within independent countries. Thirdly, they hinder the dynamics of foreign policy of independent countries and try to link foreign policy to security concerns. And fourthly, they try to change the political behavior of independent countries and force them with economic pressure to adopt behaviors that contradict their development strategies. A recent example of this policy occurred in the Ukraine war. The war in Ukraine was created with the aim of hitting Russia's global position. And after the beginning, the United States and European countries targeted the Russian economy in order to achieve their goals by freezing Russia's economy. In fact, this shows the position of economy in the positioning of countries in today's world system. Dear listeners, here we come to the end of this edition of our program. Until then, goodbye.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
The history of the land of Palestine.
Part 1.
In 1947, a Palestinian accidentally found ancient records and documents in a cave near the Dead Sea. They were ancient scrolls that probably had historical and ancient value. A part of the documents was sold and another part got to the Jews. The records are known as the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Jews rushed to the discovery site and collected and hid all the scrolls they had found. Apparently, the land has many secrets. The unearthing of the scrolls in 1947, just a year before the establishment of Israel, is more like a miracle. Because some records were completely intact. In fact, the scrolls were valuable documents that could challenge many concepts, including the notion of Israel. Sometime later, the Dead Sea Scrolls were announced to belong to 150 BC. All the rest of the documents are not published, the few revealed ones tell a strange story of the history of the land of Palestine. The writers of the scrolls lived in the caves, in secret and away from the eyes of the rulers. Why did people live in secret and underground? What were they running away from? The answer to the question was in parts of the scrolls that were never published and remained secret forever. The Ben Ezra Synagogue, Cairo. The records in this old synagogue contain strange parts of past events. Jewish business and aristocracy from Asia to Africa and from there to Europe and even the Volga in the eastern regions. Since Christianity became the official religion of Europe, Jews had been in close contact with Rome and even opened two synagogues in Rome. The Jewish presence in Rome was only for political reasons. The Jews infiltrated the church and reached the rank of cardinal and advisors and even the Pope, particularly during war. In 1094, the Byzantine Empire, which was on the verge of collapse, asked Pope Urban II for help. The Jewish advisors were in favor of war. A year later, the Pope spoke of the fulfillment of duty and divine forgiveness. Sins will be forgiven, and those killed in battle will go straight to heaven. This is how the Crusades began. In the meantime, a strange event happened. The Crusaders persecuted the Jews on their way to war fronts. The move, which was approved by the Jewish aristocracy, was to force the Jews out of the heart of Europe and into the Ottoman Empire lands. At that time, new intellectual foundations were formed. Knights, temple guards, and secret societies were established. During the 200 years of the Crusades, cultural exchanges took place. Europe got to know Islam, and Muslims developed their knowledge. Jewish merchants settled in European countries. Among them, Italy was taken to be the most important commercial centers. A special trade was popular in the country, the slave trade. The Jews were very active in this market. The scepter would not be removed from the Jews. The 15th century was the beginning of great change. A wealthy Florentine family officially went to war with the Pope, the Medici family. Of course, art was a major tool. The goal was clear: removing the power and authority of the church. Writers and translators played an important role in these developments. New concepts arose. Jews will become Christians in the future. From the 18th century, a new movement was formed among the Jews so that the Jews would become like others. In the aftermath, Jews in America enjoyed religious rights and in France enjoyed citizenship rights. Starting in the 1800s, British colonialism began to make its way into the Ottoman Empire. Jews tended to get more organized. The reforms that took place in the Ottoman Empire under the name of Tanzimat, or reorganization, gave a bitter fate to the high-ranking pashas. German immigrants formed the first Jewish communities. The situation began to change. In Tsarist Russia, a movement started. Leon Pinsker, a Jewish physician, headed the movement. He claimed that anti-Semitism was incurable and its cause was the abnormal condition of the Jews. Jews must settle in one place and one land. Everyone was whispering about the immigration. The word Zionism became quite popular. In 1893, the French army figured out a secret operation. Someone nicknamed D was spying on some people. The result of matching the handwriting left by D with the handwriting of army officers was strange. Alfred Dreyfus, a Jew, was accused of espionage. Theodore Herzl, a Jewish journalist who rarely set foot in a synagogue, appeared at Dreyfus' court. He considered the French people's view of the Jews to be the main culprit. Herzl believed the Jews should immigrate in order to change the situation. It cannot be done without immigration. He visited different people and always talked about financial issues, from the Ottomans' debts to Germans' interests and business plans. Billions were supposed to be traded. Herzl was advised to write down his thoughts in books like Uncle Tom's Cabin. Herzl begins to write, "I have a solution for the Jewish problem, a Jewish state." There, in the land of dreams, the book, Jewish State, is printed and published in thousands of copies. Herzl is regarded as a leader then on. Due to the opposition of German Jews to the notion of Zionism, the first Zionist Congress was held in Switzerland. Herzl participated in the Congress with special ceremonies. A big claim was made: the establishment of the Zionist state in Palestine. Various Jewish organizations were formed to occupy Palestine. It was approved that the process of occupation would take place gradually, primarily by workers and craftsmen.
The city of Jaffa, Palestine, an old city by the sea. This is an entry point for foreign travelers. Jews entered Palestine from this port. The economic conditions were not suitable. Administrative corruption was rampant. Jaffa turned out to be a soft touch for Jewish influence. Few Jewish immigrants hid their identity and secretly bought land through middlemen. The required financial resources were provided from abroad. From the lobbies in New York, Toronto, Montreal, Berlin, and even Cairo. And eventually, in 1905, Palestine was chosen as a final destination among all options. After the suppression of the Russian Revolution, some disillusioned Jews from different parts of Europe entered Palestine. They were poor workers, armed of course. Some of them had a bad history. Some time later, two of them attended the World Zionism Congress in The Hague. The output of the Congress was strengthening of the Jewish communities. A militia group was formed in the city of Jaffa. They're violent, saying Jews were fought off in war and bloodshed and will rise to power through war and bloodshed. The violent group was later renamed Hashomer and then Haganah. In 1907, Chaim Weizmann, a chemist and Zionist leader, entered the land. He must set up a mechanism to seize the lands around Jaffa. After 3 years, some hectares of land in the north of Palestine were taken over. The local people were forced to leave the area, and the Jewish immigration began immediately. With the expansion of the Jewish population, the next plan was implemented, taking over vacant lands, a place near Jaffa and close to the sea. The area became known as Tel Aviv, and its beach became the place of illegal entry of Jewish immigrants into Palestine. At the beginning of the 20th century, the Ottoman Empire was called the sick man of Europe. World War I began. Russia and the Ottoman Empire were gravely weakened, but Britain was satisfied with these events. In the middle of the war, the main goal of Britain was announced, Palestine. A specific plan was in progress, the defeat of the Arabs. The flames of war shoot up. The Ottoman Empire was defeated, and Al-Quds is occupied. British and French representatives secretly agreed on the partitioning of the Ottoman Empire. In 1917, with Balfour's letter to Rothschild, the leader of the Zionists in England, the creation of the Jewish state in the Palestinian territories was officially launched. Newspapers ran headlines, "Palestine for the Jews." The Arabs found out about it, but it was already too late. Worse than the Balfour Declaration was the agreement of some Arabs with the Jews. Palestinians realized that they were simply betrayed. They were left alone. After the war, the League of Nations was created. The situation of the Arabs was not clear. In paragraph 22 of the League of Nations, it is mentioned that Arabs lacked the necessary ability to manage their land. It was declared that the Arabs need the ruling of a European country until they become strong and stand on their own feet. But they've been standing on their own feet for centuries, there in Palestine. Syria, Jordan, and Palestine were parted from the Ottoman Empire. The sovereignty of Palestine reached Britain and it became a major protector. Herbert Samuel and his Zionist deputies became the rulers. Waves of Jews were coming. The efforts of the Al-Quds Mufti did not get anywhere. Muslims were put down and the Zionists were supported. In 1929, everything was in favor of the occupiers. Jewish factories flourished, Jewish workers grew exponentially, and Muslims became unemployed. Since 1929, the Zionist population has turned out to be a threat to Muslims. 6,000 Israelis in Tel Aviv shout, "The wall belongs to us." They allude to the Wailing Wall. Burak Wall, the place where Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, ascended to heaven. In Jerusalem, Al-Quds, Jews drew a curtain in front of the Wailing Wall. On the 15th of August, they chant, "The Wailing Wall belongs to us." Muslims realize the danger and walk towards the Wailing Wall in a revolutionary movement. British police block their way and suppress the Muslims. The conflict escalates and hundreds of people are killed. Many Muslims are also arrested. Three Muslims are sentenced to death and the death sentence is executed immediately. On the other hand, only one Jew is tried who will be released soon. In this way, the Burak Revolution is put down by the British through the genocide of Muslims. In May 1939, Britain publishes the White Paper to Reduce Conflicts. A group of Arabs are delighted, but this proves wrong. The White Paper does not bring any special achievements. Then UK Premier Winston Churchill is against the Islamic government in Palestine. To Churchill, the establishment of the Islamic government postpones the implementation of the Jewish plan in Palestine. Britain's controversial behavior continues. Britain speaks out in support of the Arabs, but in practice encourages the Jews to violence. In response, Muslims protest, but every gathering is suppressed. Arabs are gradually realizing the plans. Negotiations with Britain are futile. A revolutionary man, Ezzedine Qassam, stands up for Arabs' rights. He said Britain is the root cause of pain and miseries. Britain is the prime enemy of the Arabs. He revolted in 1935 and was martyred shortly after. Following the martyrdom of Ezzedine Qassam, the first resistance movement is carried out. There will be a six-month general strike. This does not reduce tensions. Britain gets to work. On the one hand, London brings in military forces, and on the other, calls for negotiations. Charles Ord Wingate, a veteran British officer, converts to Zionism as soon as he arrives in Palestine. While educating Jews, he implements a dangerous plan, the formation of armed groups. Brutal repression and widespread punishment of Palestinians. The Jews take an aggressive stance. 2 years later, with a combination of British and Jewish forces, night squads are formed. Cruel and scary people, they torture the Muslims. They whip them and pour dirt into the villagers' mouths. Violence against Muslims becomes normal. At the same time, Britain starts demolishing Palestinian homes. Their excuse is reconstruction. 240 houses are destroyed in Jaffa City, displacing some 6,000 Palestinians. By the year 1939, 5,000 houses will be destroyed. Any movement is nipped in the bud. In the 1930s, when the United States suffered an economic crisis, the Zionists reached an important agreement with Nazi Germany. In this agreement, it is stipulated that the Jews and their capitals will leave Germany. On the other hand, with the introduction of capital tax, the resources needed to buy German products and sell them in the Middle East and North Africa will be provided, and the parties to the transaction will receive the benefits.
May 10th, 1940. Hitler attacks Holland, Belgium, and France. It's a mass exodus.
Coinciding with World War II, Jewish immigration accelerates. In the meantime, Aliyah Bet Organization, with the capital of American Jews, intensifies the migration process, and thousands of people from different countries are transferred to Palestine. On the eve of the 50th anniversary of Herzl's promises, it was necessary to make some tangible measures. Previous attempts and even blowing up the ship Patria with its Jewish passengers did not have much effect. They have to do something big. A ship full of passengers anchors near the shore. Boats fall into the water, travelers hit the water and reach the Palestinian coast through the raging waters with difficulty. An interesting sight, a legendary migration, something similar to the migration of the Israelites. A scrap ship is procured from America and after being registered in Honduras, it sets sail for France. The ship is ready to sail after undergoing repairs in France. 4,500 Jews arrive with fake passports. An American priest is also with them. As a pro-Zionist, he's supposed to take the role of a witness. It was necessary for a non-Jew to tell the whole story of the journey. The ship departs. The purpose of the show is a human effort to overcome obstacles and reach the beach of freedom. The first act of the play, near the coast, the ship is intercepted by the British Navy. The second act of the play, a conflict occurs. An American sailor is killed. Radio Haganah says this is the Exodus ship. We have been attacked off the coast of Palestine in the open seas. The story of Exodus takes the headlines. UN observers are immensely impressed by the story. Britain orders the transfer of passengers to France. Passengers depart for France, but they don't get off the ships. The show goes on. Passengers are on hunger strike. A Jewish journalist enters the ship and conveys the news to America. Passengers are sent to Germany. They are forced off the ship and taken to camps. The camps of Nazi Germany. Everything is repeating itself. The publication of this news is accompanied by public anger. Some go on strike. In Palestine, Haifa police headquarters explodes. Dozens of people are killed and injured. Britain announces that immigrants will not return to Europe from now on. After some time, all the passengers of Exodus gradually and secretly return to Palestine. Under the pressure of public opinion in 1947, the resolution of the partition of Palestine was approved in the United Nations. Palestine is divided into two parts. After that, Exodus monuments are put up in Europe and America. The book Exodus, in 1958, becomes the best-selling book of its Jewish author. Indeed, Exodus becomes the exodus of the Arabs from the Palestinian lands.
In the limelight.
As global outrage continues to simmer over the slaughter of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip by the settler colonial Zionist regime, it is necessary to look back at the history of Africa, where the first genocide of the 20th century took place. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, though a span of 120 years separates the tragic events across two continents, from Palestine to Namibia, the horror of premeditated genocides evokes unequal pain and suffering for victims. Historians record that in 1904, the Herero and Nama people of Namibia, then known as German Southwest Africa, rose against the German colonizers in their struggle for freedom. The war launched by Germany against Herero and Nama, and the infamous extermination order issued by German General Lothar von Trotha that followed to crush the indigenous population, is considered by most historians to be the first genocide of the 20th century. Within the German borders, every male Herero, armed or unarmed, will be shot to death. I will no longer take in women or children, but will drive them back to their people or have them fired at. These are my words to the Herero people, from the great general of the mighty German Kaiser. Various sources confirm that in the ensuing 4 years, from 1904, tens of thousands of men, women and children were shot, tortured or driven into the Kalahari Desert to starve by German troops. It is against this backdrop that many commentators have been shocked to learn of the German government's decision to